Welcome to Hair Metal Memories. We are your hosts. I am Brian.
And I'm Aaron.
We've got some pretty big news in our little world this time to share with you guys. If you've seen our Facebook page and stuff, you probably already know this, but we're going to brag about it anyway. It's a humble brag. we got an email from this guy that is running an internet radio station called X Rock Radio, and he liked the podcast, and he asked if he could like broadcast episodes from it, and of course we agreed. We thought, like, you know, that's great, and more people will be able to hear us.
Absolutely,
and stuff like
fantastic.
That.
Wider audience. Yeah. Let's go. Let's do it.
And who doesn't like to be asked for something like that? Of course, you know.
Especially for two dudes who just decided to sit around a table and just talk about albums and stuff. You know, that's incredible.
Yeah. There's a link to it on our Facebook page, but if you look up X Rock Radio, it's an internet radio station, and he's broadcasting us at noon Eastern,
which is 9 a.m. Pacific,
on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and Saturdays at 3 p.m. Eastern,
which is noon Pacific.
Yeah. And it's been kind of cool because we've gone back and like re-edited some of our older episodes because he has a format and he has a certain time limit and stuff like that. And so we've been going back, and so some of the episodes are getting sort of like remastered, you know, because I've also realized some of the audio needs to change and stuff.
And we also do remember very specific statements about, you know, some of these guests weren't so great.
Right.
And it's no slur on any of our friends because they're wonderful people, but they just weren't receptive to talking about an album,
and our flow wasn't
and
as
that's
good either.
Fine. No, we hadn't. We weren't sure of what we wanted to do.
We're not the polished professionals you see before you now.
That's right. You hear this? This is like Van Gogh at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, right here.
Right. And that's a really good segue.
Because
in my encyclopedia, right after Van Gogh is Van Halen.
Holy shit. Look at that.
So welcome to.
You're welcome, everybody.
We're going to do, we're going to call this segment the Hair Metal Influence, and we're going to do a three-part retro on Van Halen.
We did that, we did the UFO episode, and it was really cool to, like, sit and talk about a band that wasn't necessarily one of the bands we would normally cover, but still were one of the bands where...
They meant a lot to the scene and to the genre.
And following that logic, we decided that ultimately we would pretty much have to land on Van Halen. And the thing is, given that there's a complicated history with Van Halen, it seems like it's going to take a lot more time to weave through than, say, I mean, and that's no disrespect to UFO, who have a massive, long career, but Van Halen is just... a story unto itself.
It is. And they're
huge. It takes some time to get through.
Yeah.
And for reasons that will all become clear as we go.
And there's way, way too much Van Halen lore to cover it all. And it's pretty well-documented stuff, actually. It's kind of like talking about Zeppelin or something.
Guessing a lot of y'all have probably read The Dirt. Yeah. And so there's a fun little aside that we'll get to in a little bit.
So we're going to do like a whirlwind nutshell history to sort of weave the story of the band into the music, sort of. But anyway, you know, so we're going to do a lot of things where we talk about like our least favorite songs on albums and, you know, and stuff like that, and just discuss each album and how it fits into the, you know, the larger history and all of that. But before we dig into the history or albums, let's talk about the Van Halen influence. First, is there anybody that's more influential on the genre of hair metal than Eddie Van Halen?
Probably not. I mean, now the thing is, there's probably a lot of those guys who will tell you that there's somebody else who was like, who they were really into getting into guitar or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's totally true. But, you know, really, when, like, at least Van Halen as a band, if not Eddie Van Halen himself, sort of like set the blueprint for those, like, oh, we need to start following this.
Right, and is there anybody who didn't cite him as an influence, or at least try to copy him at some point?
Not that I can think of. I mean,
so that leads me to my next question: is Van Halen hair metal?
I'm gonna say no.
Okay.
It's, and that's just sort of the same way. I mean, Led Zeppelin's not metal.
No.
But
right, yeah,
you know, without Led Zeppelin, there's right. probably not metal. I mean, and that's no diss to Black Sabbath, who are ultimately the yeah. prime movers and godfathers yeah. of metal. But you know, there's steps that have to yeah. occur, and Van Halen's one of those.
I know that some people have strong opinions about Van Halen not being a hair metal band, and
that's fair.
And we've talked about that off and on over
yes,
the
we
course
have.
Of our podcast. But after going through the albums and thinking about this, here's what I would posit.
Oh, okay.
My posit here is that with David Lee Roth, he kept things light and funny in a party atmosphere, and you don't see that much in hair metal. I think that's why Van Halen is not kind of considered hair metal. You have some exceptions.
Yeah.
There's some exceptions.
It's not that, you know,
Warrant's Cherry Pie and Motley Crue singing Girls, Girls, Girls. That's also
well, you know,
in the
I
Van Halen
to,
camp.
And this is a shout out to Ricky Rackman's podcast where he's talking about the Cat House, and which was mostly a dance club, but they would have bands play and stuff. And, you know, a lot of those bands were about putting on like a good time, kind of a party and whatnot.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of this was the days before the Power Ballad had to be on the album.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I don't know, you know,
this is
the
good.
Other hair bands are kind of a party atmosphere, if not like explicitly,
right?
You know, it's still,
I think they I think there's always
maybe at least meant to accompany a party, and like the show is a party
there's
in
a
some way, right?
Feeling of them wanting to be serious to me anyway. I get a feeling of a lot of them wanting to be kind of serious. And that,
sure,
which
and
I
that's
think
fine.
Is a quality.
Everybody
of
does one in that way. Yeah. I mean, you know, even this band has the ones that we're going to cover in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And David
and
Lee
even
Roth.
With the good singer, there's still like serious ones.
Right, yeah.
And we'll
yeah.
get to that too.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that is it. But I would also posit that when they get Sammy Hagar, they do become a hair metal band. Because that's
Ooh.
When they start doing ballads.
Yeah.
That's when they get more serious. About, you know, the topics and stuff like that, the way we see sometimes.
You know, and if you were to tell me, like, if there was a universe that existed where you told me that the same guy who produced Jafria produced... See, you're laughing because you know what I'm even going to say. Like, I don't even have to, like... Yeah, if you told me that the Jafria guy did, like, 5150, I'd be like, yeah, I get you.
Right.
Sure, okay. And that's not... I mean, I like the Jafria.
Yeah. Me too.
But, like, I would believe that.
Yeah. But anyway, I thought, you know, going in, we can talk as we go, but like I thought that was kind of my takeaway. You know, and then after Sammy Hagar, they get Gary Cherone from freaking Extreme.
And I like Gary Cherone too.
Yeah, but that's how much more hair metal can you get? You know? That's like Extreme is one of the big
best,
they're like one of the top
five
hair
metals. We've already talked about them.
Yeah,
y'all
yeah,
remember that
yeah.
stuff, Three Sides?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what's funny because, you know, I like every component of the thing that went into making VH3, which we're not going to cover today
away.
Did you ever see the movie The Lady Killers? Did you ever see when the Coen brothers remade The Lady Killers?
Yeah, I have seen that. It's
okay,
been a while.
Here's the whole thing. Everybody in that movie is great.
Yeah.
I love the Coen brothers. Everybody in that, all the actors are great.
Yeah. Yeah, great cast. Yeah.
And it just adds up to this movie where you get to the end and you're like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like they made a Hollywood movie to prove they could.
You're right. And that's
how
some of this ends up. And we'll get to that in a few episodes. But I just really wanted to throw that out there before I forgot about it.
Okay, let's dig into, let's start in the beginning.
Let's go.
Van Halen formed in Pasadena, California in 1973. They were originally called Mammoth. They were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2007. They're largely credited with bringing hard rock back to the forefront of music and paving the way for tons of bands. They're hugely influential, as we said. They are 20th on the record industry's list of best-selling artists in the United States. They've sold 56 million albums in the U.S.
Because their debut is still one of the bigger-selling debut albums.
It is one of the biggest-selling debuts, And they've sold over 100 million albums worldwide, making them one of the best-selling groups of all time. They're one of only five rock bands with two studio albums to sell more than 10 million copies in the United States.
Def Leppard.
And is tied for the most multi-platinum albums by an American band.
Def Leppard?
Def Leppard's not American.
Oh, no, that's right. You're right. American band. Yeah. I was just thinking bands that we cover because those guys just sell more albums than, you know, like, I don't know, And everybody.
You know, and additionally, they've charted 13 number one hits on the Billboard Mainstream Rock chart, which surprised me, actually. I didn't know they'd had that many.
Well, that's the Mainstream Rock chart, not the Hot 100.
Yeah.
The Mainstream Rock chart. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, when you consider, because when did the Mainstream Rock chart come into existence? It's like the 80s, right?
Sure.
I think it's the 80s. Okay. Because that's when you really get the diversification of radio versus the 70s before the digital age wiped all that away.
Right. Yeah, they started inventing charts and start tracking things at that point. Yeah, you're right. Eddie and Alex were, Van Halen, of course, were sons to the Dutch musician Jan, I'm assuming it's Jan and not Jan, Jan Van Halen and an Indonesian-born Indo-Eugenia Van Beers. So they're definitely very, you know, very diverse family. They moved to Pasadena in 1962, and young Edward began learning classical piano by ear, and he became so proficient he won an annual piano recital contest, like 2 or 3 years in a row, and he never learned how to sight read or anything. He just would go listen to it and go sit down at a piano and be able
to figure it out
and bang it out.
Yeah, I remember because, you know, and they were talking about, because when I first bought the Van Halen CDs, there were like these like budget reissues that were at Walmart, and each of the CDs would just have these tiny little bios in them.
The
Warner Brothers, the Black Sabbath Warner Brothers CDs from the 80s have the exact same little brief liner notes inside. And they talked about, how they switched instruments as kids.
Yeah, they were playing music together in the 60s, and Eddie was on drums and Alex on guitar. And then and while Ed was delivering newspapers to pay off his drum set, Alex would secretly develop a passion and proficiency at them. So while Eddie was out working, and eventually out of frustration and out of brotherly competition, Eddie told Alex, okay, you play drums and I'll play your guitar. So they switched.
Merry fucking Christmas to us.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, yeah. seemed to have worked out for everyone involved. They played backyard parties in Pasadena. They would rent a PA system from David Lee Roth for $10 a night. And then David Lee Roth auditioned for their band, and they weren't impressed. But to save money on the PA, they let him join the band. Because he didn't charge the $10 when he sang with them. He was the one who thought the band name should be Van Halen, so we get to credit him for that. They played a lot, and they
Well, and that's a great band name because
it sounds badass, you know.
Right?
Yeah.
Doesn't tell you anything about where it came from or anything like that. These Dutch guys, but I don't know.
Yeah, they played a bunch, mostly parties and stuff. They promoted the shit out of themselves too, and they built a growing following. They were
that's another thing. Actually, okay, there's their influence, okay? Because if you go back and like watch Decline of Western Civilization Part 2, or you go read interviews in Metal Edge or Circus or Rip or whatever from those bands from the 80s. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things, promoting the shit out of themselves. They would just they would spend their days walking up and down the strip, just posting their flyers everywhere you could go to grab themselves. Even beyond the sound, that's one of the things that...
Yeah, some other band did that too.
All of them.
Okay, yeah. Like, some other LA band that we just talked about.
Poison told stories about like going up to like poles and pulling down other people's posters to putting theirs up or putting them up over other people's posters, you know? I mean, it was like...
I want to say it was Warrant that maybe did it. But
I could
remember.
See that too.
Yeah. Anyway, so they're playing a lot and stuff, and in 1974, they had a major break when they were hired to play regularly at the Sunset Strip Club, Gazzari's. The Doors had also broken there, like in the 60s. That was the
Here's the funny thing about that. Once
that's a weird
again,
connection.
Go back to the Decline of Western Civilization Part 2, Gazzari's. Okay, he doesn't always pick the winner. Okay, that's important to remember, okay? Because when did that movie come out? 88, 89, something like that?
Yeah.
And Ben Gazzari's on stage, and he's like, oh, this band's going to be the next big thing. The greatest thing ever. Everybody chant it with me. Odin! Odin! Odin!
That's right.
And, you know,
and then you never heard of Odin again.
I don't know of a man, woman, or child who doesn't talk about Odin to this day.
That's right. um, Yeah, so they're playing at Gazzari's, and this led to them getting major club gigs all along the strip. Which so they you know they're so they're breaking they're you know they're a kick-ass band of course, and then they're like starting to get like a lot of notoriety. They recorded a demo tape at a studio where Steely Dan had just recorded an album, so they must have been doing pretty well if they're going to the same studio as Steely Dan in the 70s.
Well, it's Cherokee Studios. If you live in that area, Cherokee Studios is one of the places you get to go.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah, it's one of I believe Theater of Pain was recorded at Cherokee Studios.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah, if you go look at that, the list of recordings there, it's pretty. It's just, you know, it's like Sound City or Gold Star or whatever. Like if you're in that area, it's one of the places you go.
Okay.
And so they clearly, well, they had some scratch.
Yeah. Yeah, local disc jockey convinced Gene Simmons to go see Van Halen when they were opening for UFO. So, like, that's a cool little tie-in.
Look at that. We brought it right back around. The universe made it to where we had that's to do right. this show, you
that's
see.
That's right. Yeah, we did the UFO show so we could do this show.
And I'm assuming there's probably a lot of y'all listening to this. Yeah. Since you're already fans of, like, the sort of stuff we talk about, you probably heard, like, those Gene Simmons bootlegs. I'm pretty sure, like, if I go and look on my laptop right now through one of my little... folders of where I borrowed things from the internet. Please don't sue. I probably have those Gene Simmons demos sitting on here somewhere. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I grabbed them at one point, listened to them, and was like, damn,
yeah, they're on YouTube. They're widely available.
I can exactly see why you. Well, right, because YouTube exists now. The bootleg era is irrelevant.
Yeah, but Gene Simmons was super impressed, and he produced and financed a 29-track demo tape with him. That's the thing you're talking about. That's the one that exists. I don't know if the other ones. I mean, I'm sure it exists somewhere.
Well, those songs are just out there.
Yeah, and so Gene Simmons got excited about Van Halen and talked to his management, and his management told him that Van Halen had no way of making it.
Well, you know, Gene also thought that that movie with Tom Selleck was going to be one of the coolest fucking things ever.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
with the little robot bugs, okay?
Yeah.
And so, he thought that was a good idea. I think it's Runaway or something like that.
Runaways, maybe, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, okay, Gene's got a decent batting average and everything, but, you know, that doesn't mean that you don't fly out to the warning track once in a while.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, yeah, true. Van Morrison's guitarist, new producer Ted Templeman, was looking for a guitar hero for session work, and so he recommended Eddie. Ted Templeman went and saw the band with nearly nobody there at the club, but he was blown away, and he's the one who got the band signed to Warner Brothers.
And one of my favorite things about that is, see, Ted Templeman, one of the greatest things about, and my favorite reason for doing this is, oh, you know, there's a good chance I already covered this on the David Lee Roth episode.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what, guys? No, I love this story, so you're going to listen to it anyways. Ted Templeman started off as a drummer in a band called the Tikis, okay? There was a producer at Warner Brothers who was like, okay, well, you need to change that name. Because it was, back in... Well, mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. like Gene Simmons saying you should change your name.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's good they didn't. Mm-hmm. In this case, Ted Templeman's band did change their name, and they changed their name to Harper's Bazaar.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted Templeman actually switched from drums to singing. And so, you know, Life, I Love You, All is Groovy.
Oh, yeah.
That's Ted Templeman, dude.
Oh, no shit.
That is the guy who made so many albums that we love.
Okay,
and don't get me wrong, I own that Harper's Bazaar record. If you go to my record shelf right now, it is sitting there. It's an original mono pressing. It's in great shape.
Do you have his Doobie Brothers albums?
I do think I did have a copy of Toulouse Street, or however it's pronounced.
Yeah.
I listened to it like one time. I was like, okay, yeah, this is a good enough album. I'm not a huge Doobie Brothers guy, but all right, yeah.
They sound really good. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good producer. He has a sound that I can understand why you want him to make your record. Well, because we talked about he also produced we talked about the Bullet Boys, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. He produced that record too. So we've talked about Ted Templeman more than once here.
Yep. And we'll talk about him more. Yeah. Yeah.
This is number three talking about Ted Templeman.
Yep.
And so we love you, buddy.
Yep. We're gonna talk about him a little bit more too.
You. I like Harper's Bazaar. I like you.
Yeah,
I'm here.
So this brings us up to where we start talking about the Van Halen albums now. And basically what we're going to do is we're going to do a broad overview. We're not going to do the deep dive we usually do.
No, no, not album by album or anything.
Yeah, we're
going to
talk
about
the album in general, like the history that was going on at the time, play some samples from it and tell you like our favorite and least favorite songs, that kind of a thing. So, but let's kick things off.
Let's do it. Boy, that bass tone is fantastic.
It is
too.
Fantastic. Yeah. Van Halen, known as Van Halen 1, I guess, reached number 19 on the Billboard chart. It's sold over 10 million copies. It's one of the best-selling debut albums of all time. The tracks were recorded really quickly during sessions between August 31st and September 8th of 1977. It was mostly recorded live with overdubs on about half the songs. And it was produced for about $54,000. So I bet they're really happy with the return on that investment.
That, well, yes. Yeah. They didn't have to put in a lot on that. And then, they did well.
Yeah. Although I saw an interview with them after they got back together, which is like jumping way ahead, I know. They talk about how like in the early days they got like points, you know, that whole system.
Right, the point system.
And they said they went out and they sold like, you know, they sold a million albums, went on tour, and had every show was sold out, and they got back and the record label told them, you owe us $1 million.
Oh, no, that's not even, okay. Like,
And so then they had to go, so they just immediately wrote another album and did it again.
That's not exclusive to Van Halen. I remember reading a story. The group New Edition, who's the boy band pop group from the 80s.
Yeah.
They sold millions of records, had huge charting hits, platinum this, platinum that. And Bobby Brown was like, the most we ever got was like checks for like $200 and like a VCR. We're making platinum records and touring and selling out everywhere. And I got $200 freaking dollars.
Yeah, and it's good to see. Yeah,
it's the same accounting that like a lot of people will use to show how, you know, theoretically, these big blockbuster movies didn't make any money. It's like, it's that really shady accounting shit.
It is shady accounting. Yeah, and they in the interview they walked through it. It's on YouTube. You can see it. It's pretty hilarious. And you know they're it's good that they can laugh about it now because it, you know it sounds like at the time it was just like what the. Every song in this album is a banger.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is great. What's your favorite song?
Oh man, that's so hard to pick.
Yeah, it changes over time, but like it today.
Okay, in one way, it seems like really obvious, but Running with the Devil is like it's the first David Lee Roth Van Halen song I ever heard because my parents had this cassette tape. They had Van Halen 1. I just didn't know what it was at the time.
Yeah.
Like I had heard David Lee Roth on his own.
Yeah.
And the first Van Halen I ever heard was with Sammy Hagar singing.
Okay.
So I didn't know the connection until I was a little bit older, right? Because I remember seeing a video and being like, everybody in that band looks like they're the guys from Van Halen, but there's that David Lee Roth singing for them.
Yeah.
And this was just me putting this together on my own as a little kid, right?
Their new singer,
And then I was like, wait a minute. And I went and pulled that tape out of my parents' collection and was like, hey.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know any of the songs off this, right? So imagine just going in fresh. You don't know that David Lee Roth, this guy that you think is the coolest dressed person you've ever seen in your life, was in this band called Van Halen that had this lame-ass singer named Sammy Hagar. Sorry, Sammy, whatever, and the fans are. And so you put in Van Halen 1, and you start the tape, and this song gives you, is like, whoa, okay. Yeah. That is like the coolest thing I've ever heard. Okay,
I never get tired of that. I mean, if I'm in a bar somewhere and I hear, you know, if I hear that siren and then the bass line, I'm immediately just sort of like, I'm in a good mood. I'm just, you know.
There's a great video out there about another reason why quantizing music is bad. Because this dude, he took this song and ran it, you know, through like.
Yeah.
What's that? The Apple thing, the music program. And he was like, okay, if we quantize this song, you can hear right away that they don't stick to a rhythm, like, steady.
Right.
Like, by the time his bump, 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 And by the time the band comes in, they're already off the click.
Right.
They have left the click track.
That makes sense. But they play together, so that's the important thing.
And if you that's the whole point, is that playing together is more important than playing to the click.
Right.
Because you can tell that song is just utter perfection, but no, they don't stick to the click within the first like 8 beats of the song. They are off of the click track. But they're all playing together.
Right.
So whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and
people love that song, so, you know,
absolutely. Yeah. And there's other really good examples of that. Like, you know, you can listen to like Frank Zappa songs and hear where the band has sped up and slowed down as they play, especially the second song on Hot Rats. You can actually hear the band get faster as they go.
Yeah.
And as they rock out and they start feeling it. So, you know, everybody does it. Even the people, the great trained players, they will. Yeah.
Is that Willie the Pimp? Is that the second one?
Yes, Willie the Pimp. Okay. So songs will get faster sometimes when they're feeling it. King Diamond, it happens on the Abigail album. Okay. You can hear them like speed up and slow down a little bit. So, you know, Running with the Devil is not exclusive to that club or anything.
No, no. Yeah, that's a good choice.
So, yeah, probably Running with the Devil.
Yeah, and this time going through it, the one that stuck out to me a lot was I'm the One.
I thought about that pick, too. Yeah. I really thought about that pick, too. That was a strong consideration.
Yeah, after I listened to the album and I was going about my day, that's the one that kept popping up in my head, and I was going, God damn, that's a catchy song.
A friend of mine once pointed out to me, because, you know, I have no musical training despite playing music or what I claim to do playing music. So I don't know like a lot of the terms and a lot of the stuff. And one of the best guitar players I ever like heard just sit like grab a guitar and play. He was talking about, he's like, well, you know, the thing is, a lot of Van Halen songs, they're just shuffle songs. You play a shuffle beat. It's just you got to play it real fast, and you really got to.
That's true. It is all fast shuffle. And
so when you start looking through their songs, you're like, oh my God, that's right. They really like to play shuffle beats, don't they?
Yeah. What's your least favorite song? It's okay.
I'm going to have to go with You Really Got Me.
That was mine too.
And it's not even that I don't like it. I think it's great. It's just great.
It's a cover, yeah.
That's the only reason. Only because it's a cover. Yeah. And that's not even to like disparage it in any way, because I love it.
I picked the same thing for the same reason.
Because I also love the Kinks, and I love the Kinks version too. Yeah. So that's pretty much what by that same token, we could have, that's on Fair Warning, actually. Ice Cream Man is technically also a cover. It's just not the same sort of like omnipresent song that You Really Got Me is, you know, because you're just as likely to hear one or the other at this point in time. So that's why I would go with You Really Got Me over Ice Cream Man.
And I picked out some things to play. One of the things I wanted to play is, so everybody knows, like, you know, Eruption is like this, you know, guitar masterpiece and stuff. But the thing, I think most people focus on like the tapping part, which is amazing, you know, and was revolutionary when you first heard it and stuff. But for me, I've sat down and tried to learn how to play some of this stuff. And I can kind of, you know, I wouldn't do it in public, but I can kind of fudge my way through some of the tapping stuff and all that. But there's a part where he does that speed picking lick. To me, this is like far crazier. So I wanted to play that.
Do it up.
Insanely fast. Yeah, that's like the fastest thing I think he ever plays, you know.
No, I think you're probably right there.
And another thing I wanted to highlight was the Feel Your Love Tonight, that a cappella vocal section, because they were great fucking singers.
They were. Yeah. They really knew how to arrange some vocals.
Yeah.
You gotta give it to them, right?
I think that makes them shine more than most bands in this genre, too.
It gives another like level of just coolness to the whole sound, you know, because, it's pretty straight-ahead rock and roll music, but then to have these like cool, like, damn near borderline like Beach Boy harmonies over it. It's just like, wow, all right. And, you know, we can thank Michael Anthony for being like the anchor of that melody.
We can, yeah. Yeah, so here's an example.
I can't wait to feel your love tonight.
I can't wait to feel your love tonight.
I can't wait to be your loving tonight.
I can't wait to feel your love tonight.
Yeah, that's like really good.
Those are great harmonies.
Yeah,
those are fantastic. fantastic. You know, the fun thing is my boy David is listed as David Roth on the album.
Oh, nice. Okay.
David Roth.
Okay.
One of my best friends from high school was David Roth. If you're out there listening, maybe I probably shouldn't have said your name. I don't know how that works, but like, hey, buddy, you're not going to hear this. You don't like hair rock. And it's okay. I don't judge.
I just watched an interview with Steve I where he refers to him as Dave Roth.
Well, he played with him, though.
You get to play with him.
He has a level of familiarity with that is acceptable for that.
Yeah. I thought it was like kind of funny, though. I'm just not used to hearing it.
Dave Roth.
Yeah. And then the only
sounds
other
like the
thing,
guy who's going to set up your IRA or some shit like that. Right.
I didn't pick much out of this because this is a well played album, like, you know, and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
but so I was trying to think of like cool
are
things
you guys
to highlight.
Familiar with this
right.
Van Halen one?
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. But another tidbit I learned is that like one of the few overdubs on this album is on Ain't Talking About Love during the solo. Eddie doubles it with an electric sitar.
I did see that he was credited for that.
Yeah, and I never like stopped and listened to it. So I thought, let's just take a moment to pause and reflect and listen to it. And you can hear it. And I hadn't really heard it to this level before. So. I always thought that was a phaser or something.
Right? It just sounds like some process guitar.
Yeah. I thought it was a process guitar, but it's an electric sitar. And I just like, go Eddie, man. That's
once
really
again,
cool.
You know how long this album is? 35 and a half minutes.
Yeah, it is. It's a short one.
It makes its point. It rocks the hell out.
Yeah.
And then leaves.
Yeah.
It leaves you no time to like sit and think about, well, you know what they could have done better? No, because it's already done and it's kicked your ass. And it's, you know.
Yeah. And I want to give David Lee Roth gets credit for playing acoustic guitar on Ice Cream Man. That was something else that I don't think people knew that he can play a guitar, you know. The Van Halen 1 was not a big critical success when it came out. Neither was
Black Sabbath's first album.
Neither was Led Zeppelin's. Yep. During Pink Floyd did not have good critical success.
No.
Rush. Yeah, a lot of my favorite bands were not critically
acclaimed.
Have
you guys heard of this band, Rush?
But it sold like crazy. So after they released it, the band went on tour with Journey and Montrose, where they most likely met Sammy Hagar, I have to assume. And then another 9-month tour with Black Sabbath. So their first tour,
and you know,
they
and that's crazy because
Black Sabbath.
And the thing is, they're touring with Black Sabbath when Black Sabbath is in turmoil, and Ozzy's not getting along with the rest of the group. He doesn't have much time left in the band. And I'm going to probably guess, I love Black Sabbath, but I'm guessing Van Halen was just wiping the stage with them at this point.
Probably, because they're young and energetic
and they're
hungry, you know.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah. And I kind of like, you know, taking a step back now, I think at this point, when you listen to Van Halen 1, I think this album's a little too on the tough side to really be hair metal. But a lot of the earmarkings are there.
You know, here's the funny thing. Yeah. A Rolling Stone hated this album.
They did.
Hated it. Yeah. Their retrospective reviews give it 4 and 5 stars. And they talk about how it's like, fuck y'all, dude.
Their critics were pretentious snots back then. So
yeah, no, I'm sorry. You're doing the George Lucas revised reviews, aren't you? So no, I'm sorry. Yeah. You hated it. Stand by your stuff and be wrong.
Yeah, so we're still in our first year of them, like, you know, putting out an album and going on tour and you know, striking it huge. And then in late 1978, they returned to the studio for 2 weeks to record the follow-up. Weirdly, all of these first albums, these early albums, were recorded in 2 weeks. It's like they were really incredibly efficient back then.
Well, because they had a catalog of songs built up.
Yeah,
you figure
they did. Yeah.
When they got together versus...
Yeah. Yeah, so we're on to
getting to this album. You're talking about like their early live repertoire, you know.
Yeah, we're on Van Halen 2 now, and a lot of these songs were the ones that were on the Gene Simmons demo tape. The small trivia: the black and white guitar on the back cover of Van Halen 2 is buried with Dimebag Darrell.
Yes, I was just waiting for that
sorry.
To be brought.
I didn't mean to steal your thunder.
No, you're fine. Yeah. That's all good. I just want to make sure that it was noted. That's all. Because because the whole thing was. when he died, I guess the Abbott family had reached out to Van Halen and was like, hey, he was your, like, you're his favorite guitar player. Would you make a replica of the guitar on the back of Van Halen 2?
Yeah.
And Eddie was like, oh, no. I'm not making a replica. You're getting this one.
Yeah.
And that's like, wow.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah.
That's pretty huge.
Yep. Go Eddie, you know. In the liner notes of Van Halen 2, they thank the Sheraton Inn in Madison, Wisconsin, because apparently they trashed one of the floors of the hotel having a fire extinguisher fight, and they blame their tour mate's Journey for that.
So they have
fire extinguisher fight and blame Journey.
Dude, I mean, okay, you know, if you like Journey, that's totally cool.
Yeah,
I'm not a Journey person.
I bet Journey party. Journey... You know,
but come on, like, if you imagine you're like the hotel people. And you have Van Halen and Journey staying there. And Van Halen's like, it wasn't us, it was them. And you look at Journey and you're like, oh, yeah, no, that makes sense. It's way more the clean. No, come on.
Yeah. David Lee Roth told me it was the Journey. So
David Lee Roth probably had like a nose that was all like powder white at the time going, it wasn't us.
Yeah, yeah. And they believed him. He's like so charming. They believed him. Yeah.
I get. I've often said that he is the real world's equivalent to Zaphod Beeblebrox. So
he really is. Yeah.
I will accept that.
Yeah, yeah. Van Halen 2 is largely criticized of being a copy of the first, but I'm kind of like, why mess with the success?
And that's a really messed up argument because, if you're good at something, are you really saying that you should stop doing it?
Right, yeah.
Maybe a little bit, but it's just they had a whole lot of good songs right away.
They did, yeah. Yeah, and they open with a cover of You're No Good, which had been a hit for Linda Ronstadt, amongst others. Other people had that song, too. Their version's pretty cool, with, like, volume fade-ins and little double stops all over the place. Dance the Night Away is, like, a solid-ass pop single, I think. And reportedly, the only song written during the recording of the album. So they were writing some stuff, you know.
I guess, you know, if you pan back and you think about the overall context of that record and you think about a lot of those songs, I guess you could you could maybe see how Dance the Night Away was one of the newest songs on that record, like, comparatively to the others.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to say that it's any less than it is, it kicks ass too, but, you can feel how that's maybe a little bit newer, sure, yeah.
Yeah, it kicks ass. It does end with a fade out, though, so.
Suck it, Blue Jack.
My take is that some of the songs on this aren't as strong as on the first album, but we start to see a trend in Eddie's solos elevating ordinary songs into something more. that's kind of my take. And I do like that the album ends with a kiss. He ends with that.
Okay, that is cool.
There's a lot of humor in the songs, which is kind of unusual, you know. And as I was, like, positing earlier, it's like, you know, this level of humor you would not probably find in normal hair metal albums.
No. Yeah. No. I would agree with that. Now, see, Van Halen's one of those fun bands where in this... Okay, we're going to get nerdy for a second. In this Dungeons and Dragons group I used to play in... most of the people in the group are pretty big Van Halen fans, and we would have, like, big arguments. I mean, not, like, you know, big arguments, but we would go off on which Van Halen album was the best one.
Yeah.
And our dungeon master in the group, my friend Brian, who I don't think has ever heard an episode of this, I've told him to listen. Brian, why aren't you listening? Come on, dude.
You're screaming into the void, dude.
You have a data plan. Download this shit. But he always insisted that this was the best Van Halen album.
Oh, okay.
It was always his pick.
Yeah.
There were, I believe, out of the 9 people in our group, 4 of us were big Van Halen fans, and there was 4 different picks for the best album.
Well, interesting.
Our other friend picked the first album, which is a totally fine argument. I get that, too.
Yeah.
We're not talking about the one I think is the best.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Okay. On this one, what's your favorite song?
Actually, I think my favorite one is Light Up the Sky.
That's mine, too.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I am not kidding you. I'm looking at my notes. It's written down.
Okay,
yeah.
Everybody, we did not talk about this. We did not.
We
talked about the
notes.
Fact that we were going to, like, maybe pick favorite songs and stuff like that, but we did not pick the favorites or least favorites.
You talk about it first, though.
Just because it's just a great way to lead off a side of a record. And, you know, I think this comes up a lot of the times when we talk about albums on here, and my love of LP sequencing and the way it makes you think about how you're going to open and close a side, and Light of the Sky just comes out and just kicks your fucking head in, you know? Especially because, you know, You're No Good, like, starts off the album all chill.
Yeah.
And so they do, like, the total opposite on the side. And they're just like, boom. And that's what I love about it so much.
Yeah, I'd forgotten how strange it is. Like that chromatic intro riff. And the song kind of chugs like a metal tune in spots. It's like they really are kind of getting heavier.
Well, and that's the thing is, there's actually, you know, we don't always think about it, but throughout Van Halen, there's a lot more chug than you think there is.
Yeah.
It's just that it just happened just in just little bits.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a signature. It was just a thing that they would every now and then kind of...
Eddie's too wild to chug, you know?
Right. He would give you just a minute of it just to, like, kind of lure you into something so that he could go off and go weird, you know? And it was wonderful.
Yeah, and some of the rhythm guitar bits reminded me of, like, it's almost like new wave guitar or something. And so I thought, like, you know, in my mind, I was, like, picturing Eddie, like, just grabbing from all the music around it and putting that into that
based
song.
On a lot of the stuff he said about music, I could see him being kind of one of those guys who, I mean, maybe he's like a rock and roller or whatever, but he's got his kind of ear out there for like, oh, what's going on over there? Oh, that's cool, you know.
So I Light Up the Sky was my favorite this time too. And but I also wanted to give a shout out to the vocal harmonies on Women in Love, because that's a high point too.
That's a good one. That's very good.
Okay, least favorite.
Actually, we're going to go back to the cover again. You're No Good might be my least favorite.
Okay.
Once again, because it's a cover.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody. I've got really, like, some huge David Lee Roth biases. I just fucking love the guy, and I love early Van Halen. So sometimes,
he's
like,
great.
My least favorite song on an album is like, you know, picking your least favorite, like, square inch of your favorite painting, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, I love it all, but I guess if I had to be critical, it'd be this little thing over here.
Yeah.
So You're No Good is wonderful, but it would be my least favorite if only because, you know, the rest of it, it's them.
Right, yeah.
How about you?
Mine was Bottoms Up, and I have the same logic. I still dig it. I just feel like it's not quite maybe up, you know, if the other songs were having a battle, that would be the one I would probably like, you know, if I had to delete one song off of the album, I would miss it a lot, but I would still do it. that'd be
all
the
right
one.
That's fair.
And let's play some stuff off of this.
Hell yes.
I wanted to play, this is the solo to Somebody Get Me a Doctor. Because this is everything that is great about Eddie Van Halen, in my mind. And I'm straight out down that line. And he even gets applauded for it on the album. So.
I mean, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, and he starts out with, like, volume swells and then goes through all this stuff and then that chromatic walk-up stuff. And it's just like, damn, dude, you're just, you know, showing off. But
packing a lot of tricks into one solo.
Right, yeah. And the other one, another one I want to play was the solo from Out of Love Again, because it's just a furious little burst that's amazing. And
beautiful.
Attitude of David Lee Roth is just like Yeah.
Beautiful. Loved it.
Yeah, and I also picked out the solo section to Light Up the Sky, but I'm glad we both picked that as like our favorite song. So
nice. Let's do it. Some Light Up the Sky.
Yeah, and this has like drums and all, man. I want to do the whole thing.
Well, it's because we love Alex too.
Right, yeah.
Recognize them anymore. Ooh, mama, see the firelight. Ooh, I'm coming out tonight. Ooh, mama, see the firelight. Ooh, lighting up the sky. Light up!
That brings us up to 1980 and Women and Children First. First
that
album.
Was the only single on this.
Yeah, yeah. And this is their first album with no covers.
I mean, yeah, that's like a whole thing.
Yeah. Also recorded in 2 weeks. Also went platinum.
They knew how to make it work.
Could This Be Magic contains the only female backing vocal ever recorded for a Van Halen song.
Nicolette Larson.
Yeah. Yep, she sings during the choruses. And the rain sound in the background is not an effect. It was raining outside, and they decided to record the sound in stereo using two Neumann KM84 microphones and added it to the track. I geek out on the microphone shit. Sorry about it, you know. But this record is a little harder edged, and there's some experimentation going on, like Tora Tora being a good example.
Hell yes,
you know. And so they're fucking with the formula a little bit here. You know, which is kind of cool to see, and I would say welcome. You know,
well, sure. No. I mean, you know, I guess if you're taking into consideration how everyone's like, oh, the second album is just a copy of the first one,
right?
Well, it's like, okay, well then here, how about this?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And the song, the snippet we just heard, the cradle will rock. That's the first time Eddie played keyboards on a recording.
Yes, it would have been.
So, and we'll that's foreshadowing there.
Oh.
And that intro that most think is a guitar is a Wurlitzer piano played through Eddie's Marshall Plexi.
Dude, all right.
Yeah, which I thought was like, so that's pretty inventive. He's experimenting with sounds in addition to, you know, all the stuff he's doing. And I also, like, Everybody Wants Some was used in the movie Better Off Dead, and there's a great claymation scene that goes with it.
Right.
I highly recommend that. I bet that's got to be on YouTube somewhere, but I highly recommend
that. I guarantee
that
sequence has been clipped out somewhere.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, you should do it.
And once again, this album, 33 and a half minutes.
Yeah.
You can.
They're wisely keeping it short.
You don't need a whole hour to kick somebody's ass.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a fair amount of acoustic guitar on it, which is a little bit different. For them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This very much feels like a transitional album, I would say.
It's probably my least favorite of the David albums, but that's
okay.
Also like, I also love all the David albums.
Okay.
So.
Interesting.
You know, take that for
okay.
what it's worth. I mean, it doesn't really.
Okay.
Once again, it doesn't mean there's anything I don't necessarily not, you know, like on it or whatever.
Okay. Favorite song?
My favorite song is just totally Everybody Wants Some. I know it's like a super obvious pick, but Jesus, man. I just really like the chorus vocal.
Yeah.
And it makes me really happy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a classic.
You know, and it's it's oddly longer than a lot of Van Halen songs you get before it. And now there's there is a song on this album that is almost 6 minutes long, which is the next song, "Fools."
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
But yeah, 5 minutes.
Yeah, you know, which is amazing for a Van Halen song.
In 1980, that's rock and
rock.
Roll. Yeah, you're getting that's a little newer. You know, we hadn't seen the expansion to the digital age of a time mindset. So 5 minutes was a little bit longer then.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, significant real estate on the side of an album. You know,
correct. In the world of thrash, they always talked about how you had to keep to four songs on a side, because thrash metal, you start getting longer songs because of all their, you know, riff love.
Yeah.
And so they had this thing about, you know, the 8-song album, because, well, any more than 4 songs on a side and it wasn't gonna start sounding bad.
I picked Everybody Wants Some as well, but I also had a shout out to Take Your Whiskey Home, which has a nice grindy groove to it, acoustic guitar, a bitchin' little solo, and a ton of attitude. I had a hard time, that one I also wanted to give. You know, that would be my number two, probably.
Fair enough.
Yeah. What's your least favorite?
Oh, boy, that's tough. That's tough. Probably the closing song.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's still good, but I don't know. It's just my least favorite song on it, and it's in a simple rhyme. It's not bad or anything. It's just, it's my least favorite one.
Same.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I keep feeling like we wore the same t-shirt or something.
I like the little hidden track at the end of the record.
Yeah,
like that's a lot of. I like that they stuck one there. That's clever.
Yeah,
because you know, in the early days of the LP, you could put a little 20 seconds at the end, and everyone was like, "What is this?"
Yeah, I think "In a Simple Rhyme" is like, I mean, it's good, but it doesn't stand out to me that much. And every other track on the album feels like it's accomplishing something on the record. And this is a different. It's like, here's another song, you know. So
yes, it's maybe the first time in Van Halen where you feel like you get a song that, oh, here's another song.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As opposed to this one, all kicks ass.
And I have a couple things to play from this one. I wanted to play the "Take Your Whiskey Home" acoustic intro, just because I really dig how that.
Dig it.
She don't want me around. She said she's tired of watching me fall down. She wants a good life and all the best, but I like that bottle better than the rest. And she said, I think that you're headed for a whole lot of trouble. Well, I think that you're headed for a whole lot of trouble. Well, I think that you're headed for a whole lot of trouble.
Eddie cites Eric Clapton as being like a huge influence, which makes me think of, like, you know, his blues, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And when you listen to the way Dave sings and the way Eddie's playing there, they could have been a pretty competent blues band if that's the direction they wanted to go. That's pretty good stuff. But
I'm glad they didn't just become another blues band.
Me too.
Because, you know,
me too.
That
yeah. But it's kind of cool that they have moments where they show it off.
This avenue gives them a lot more lasting influence.
Yeah. And then the other, I wanted to play the outro to "Could This Be Magic," because it has the album title in it, and it's so different, and it has those vocal harmonies again that I'm just like bowled over by. So,
could this be magic, or could this be love? And I say, could this turn tragic? You know that magic I've been done. I see lonely ships upon the water. Better save the women and children prize. Sail away with someone's daughter. Better save the women and children prize. Yes, sir.
I just now realized that the two samples I picked are both acoustic.
Well, I mean, you know, when you get to this record, that's kind of like a new thing.
They were moments that stood out. So, that takes us. We're now into 1981. And for fair warning,
the best Van Halen album.
Yeah. By this time, Eddie's wanting to do some darker and more complex things.
Hell
and,
yes, buddy.
And heavier stuff.
And I'm here for it.
Yeah, and David Lee Roth's wanting to keep things fun and light, so we've got some tension brewing in the band.
But it made for a wonderful record.
Yeah. You can tell by listening on this that Eddie was winning.
Yes. And this was recorded at the legendary Sunset Sound, which is a great place, one of the big places to record records, like we said earlier.
Yeah.
If you're in Southern California there, Sunset's right up there with Cherokee and all that.
Right, very famous studio. And during the sessions of this, at one point, Ted Templeman walks out because of the tensions going on. That's how bad it's getting. The producer walks out.
I just got done reading the Scott Burns book about making some of the great death metal records, and there was a number of times that he would walk out of the studio and just go outside and scream "fuck," and then go back in and be like, "Okay,
yeah,
now we can get back to work."
Yeah, yeah, that just sounds like therapy. I'm surprised that's not like a therapy movement, you know? the scream "fuck" therapy. Fair Warning was the slowest selling album, you know, so far in their history, but it still went double platinum. So, I mean, that's still not a slouch. Sinner's Swing has the first F-bomb on a Van Halen album.
31 minutes and 11 seconds. Yeah, that's perfection.
And Unchained has Ted Templeman on it saying, come on, Dave, give me a break. And I love that. That's so cool. And it's cool that if that's the one he walked out on, you know, maybe that was his welcome back. Was like, come on, Ted, be part of the album.
Because it is the one. When you look at like a lot of the vocals through the first side, they're a lot chiller. Yeah. And boy, what a great, I mean, come on, man. Mean Street in a dirty movie, Sinner's Swing, fucking Hear About It Later. Yeah. Oh, that's such a good run of songs. Damn it, dude.
It is.
So good.
You know, and this is one where those in the camp that don't acknowledge Van Halen as a hair metal band, I would, you know, cite this in particular on their side of this because it's weirder. It has some pop song moments on it, but it's a bizarre entry in their catalog, actually.
It does kind of stick out amongst all of their records, but
it's whatever. One of my favorites though. I mean,
this is my favorite one hands down. Yeah. I love it. It's just it's utter perfection.
Yeah, what's your favorite song?
My favorite song is tracks 8 and 9 together as one track. Sunday Afternoon in the Park into 1 Foot Out the Door. That is my favorite thing on the whole record. It's beautiful and just wild. And Sunday Afternoon has these really cool and weird fills that Alex does to get back. The first big fill that leads us back into the top of the melody of the song is just really weird, and it sounds like it has an extra beat in it, but it doesn't. It's just he just starts his fill at a strange place, and that's just so cool. And it just kind of fades into 1 Foot Out the Door. And 1 Foot Out the Door, Dave is fucking bringing it, man. He is just on that song. That is my favorite part of the whole album.
Okay. Mine was Hear About It Later.
Good choice.
It just emerged for me this time. I don't think I've appreciated that one very much, you know? I mean, Unchained is pretty unassailable just because.
Absolutely.
But like,
that's one of my favorite Van Halen songs also.
Yeah, but in the process of going back and listening to stuff.
But Hear About It Later has like this kind of cool, like, you know, like the little section about, and it feels right.
It's more complex. And
it has some weird little complexities to it that are really neat. So, that's a good pick.
What's your least favorite?
Fuck you. There's no least favorite. That's how it works. This album's perfect. Nope. This is the one that doesn't have a least favorite. This album's perfection.
Okay. Well, don't be mad, but my least favorite was Sunday Afternoon in the Park.
Oh, dude, that's so cold.
But, you know, I like the weirdness, but it's...
That song is so awesome. Yeah. I love it.
But my note was that it sticks out, I think, on the album, but, like, I'd like to hear an all-weirdo Van Halen album like this, though. That
would be a tough sell with most...
Yeah.
I mean, I could see, like...
Yeah. I mean, I love this song.
I could see Eddie definitely being like, I'll do that if you want.
Yeah.
But I could see Warner Brothers and everybody else being like, no, we're not doing that.
You're right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because, I love...
And this will come up again later, too. But, like... And again, I love the weirdness of it, and I love the song. But, like, if I had to pick one, that would be the one. Okay, and now some...
And one of my favorite things is in So This Is Love. I've never actually heard, like, a newer remastered. I had a you know, like the 1987, 1988 issue CD, and my LP is one of the original run LPs. And it happens on all of it. The song So This Is Love, there's, like, a volume reduction that happens after, like, the first, like, 4 or 5 beats or so. You can hear the song get a little bit quieter.
Yeah.
And then come back up as it goes. And it's really weird. And I've always wondered,
was it on purpose or was
why that's there?
Was it to cover something or was it is it creative? And I know there's choice,
like, you know, Mo Fidelity put out like a big super fancy 3 LP edition of this album or some shit like that. And I don't know if that was fixed later, but that's always just struck me as weird.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's listen to a little piece.
Yeah. I wanted to play the solo from Sinner's Swing. I think that's a really good one.
And it's so short.
It's so short. It exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
For one of the longer songs, or I guess it's not one of the longer songs, I'm sorry. Was that 8 bars or so? We just
go
in and rage it and get out. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that one doesn't get enough like attention, I think, because, like, you know, I don't know.
Well, most of this album doesn't get a lot of attention outside of Unchained.
Yeah.
Maybe every now, you know.
Yeah.
When I think about, like, the classic rock radio that I was exposed to, like, later on when Van Halen would have shifted into that classic rock radio mode, this album was barely represented. You would get Unchained every now and then, and at best, the other song you would get is So This Is Love.
Right, yeah.
Literally, like, the other single.
And I don't know if I've ever even heard that on the radio, to be honest.
Oh, I heard it on our local...
Okay.
Des Moines Classic Rock Radio Station, which we'll go mentionless because,
okay.
I'm not giving them any press.
I also wanted to play the intro to Hear About It Later because it's like, it's cool. It's it's clean. It's definitely more complex. And Eddie was such a great rhythm player, but it gets overshadowed by like what a lead player he was. And so this, you know, I like to shine the light on those little corners. So here.
Cool. That move right there is dumb.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's some kind of phaser or something he's got on his guitar.
Yeah. Right? And it's a real chill one, too.
Yeah.
And so you know, Rolling Stone album guy gave this album 2.5 stars out of 5 so they can fuck right off. I already didn't like Rolling Stone.
Just really cool and a chill way to go into a song.
That is such a great intro.
And then I wanted to play the So This Is Love solo because because I really like it. Little tasty thing.
That's
I almost feel like that's what Eddie sounds like when he's like tired or something.
The tired Van Halen solo. I like that.
It's like he's just chilling out, you know. And even when he chills out, he's still like he can't not rock. Anyway, this concludes part one of our Van Halen retro, though. We hope you'll tune in next time. We're going to be digging in with part two with the next album will be Diver Down.
Hell yeah.
All right. Catch you next time.
Later, guys.